Okay, so we are holding Kuf Nun Amud Aleph at the Mishnah. Continuing on the topic of things that you're allowed and not allowed to say and to do on Shabbos in terms of business. The previous Mishnah we learned about not reading off a list of guests from a list, and we said one reason was because you're going to read shtarei hedyotis, you're going to read business related documents or other things like that that have nothing to do with Shabbos. So now we're continuing on the topic of business-related things that you are allowed and not allowed to do on Shabbos. So the Mishnah says, "Lo yisku adam poilim b'Shabbos." A person is not allowed to hire workers on Shabbos. "V'lo yoma adam l'chaveru lisku l'poilim." Also, a person is not allowed to tell somebody else to hire workers for him. Now, the hiring workers, Rashi says, is part of mitzvah cheftzicha. We know the psukim in Yeshaya that we say by Shabbos morning kiddush, "Zeim tashem b'Shabbos aglecha v'karasa l'Shabbos oneg." You'll honor Shabbos by not doing your normal ways, or looking after your own affairs. So this would be an example of looking after your own affairs, your own business. As far as not saying to somebody else to, the Gemara is going to say, of course, if the other person's a Yid, of course you're not allowed to do it to Lefnever. So we'll see in the Gemara what that's about. Continues the Mishnah. You're not allowed to stay, you're not allowed to go to the edge of the Tchum on Shabbos and wait there till it gets dark. So machshichin would mean to wait till it gets choshech, till it gets dark, till Shabbos is over, and you're going to wait by the end of the tchum, lisko le'poyolim l'havi peiris, where you plan then after Shabbos to continue walking outside the tchum and go hire workers or bring peiris from your orchard, which is outside the tchum, because the general rule is anything that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos, you're not allowed to go to the edge of the tchum for. So Tosfos actually points out, there's a Tosfos on Amud Beis, which actually belongs to the Mishnah, but was printed over there, that you're not allowed to go all the way to the edge of the Tchum, but the implication is you would be able to go someplace, you would be able to start walking towards your destination. You just can't go all the way to the edge of the Tchum. Tosfos explains, because when you go all the way to the edge of the Tchum, it makes it obvious that you're doing it in order to do a malacha after Shabbos, as opposed to if you just walk, 1,000 amos or whatever outside the Tchum, it doesn't become so obvious. The Ran actually has a different explanation, which is that if you go all the way to the edge of the Tchum, the Chachamim are concerned that you might accidentally go outside the Tchum on Shabbos. So you're not allowed to do that. Aval machshichu lishmer. But what you are allowed to do is you're allowed to go out to be closer to where you need to go to watch your peiros. Or maybe peiros biyadeh, and then when you're coming back after having watched them, then you're allowed to bring back peiros. In other words, basically it comes down to, is the activity that you were planning to do something that is mutter on Shabbos or something that's aser? So to hire workers, we said, is aser. To collect fruit and bring it is also aser, and we'll see in the Gemara exactly, are we just talking about the malacha of carrying? There may, of course, if the fruit is still attached to the ground, then you also have the malacha of koitzer. But as opposed to watching the fruit, guarding it to make sure that that thieves or birds or whatever don't get at it, that's something you're allowed to do on Shabbos. Therefore, you're also allowed to be machshich al tchum in order to do that. That's the general rule. Then comes down to, is there a way, we're going to see on Amud Beis, is there a way to do this activity on Shabbos in a way that's mutter? And if it is, then you're allowed to be machshich al tchum. And as we'll see as we go through, you may in such cases also, when there's a way to do it in a way that's mutter, you also may be able to tell somebody else to do it for you. The Alter Rebbe actually has a long discussion about it in a Kuntra Sachron earlier in Hilchos Shabbos in connection with the dinim about where if you take in Shabbos early, if another person takes in Shabbos on time, about the dinim of when you're allowed to tell somebody else to do a malacha for you during that time, when you accepted Shabbos, but the other person didn't yet, where there's the consideration, it's a thing that's mutter, because after all, it's still mutter for them to do these things, and therefore, that would be an example of something that you're allowed to tell them to do. So similarly over here, this is the kind of thing, guarding your fruit is something that you yourself are allowed to do. We'll talk in the Gemara also about other kinds of activities that you might have, there might be a way on Shabbos to do them, which is mutter. Okay, so the Mishnah continues. Klal Omar Abba Shol. So Abba Shol said a general rule. Kol shani zakai bamiro. So anything that I'm able to tell somebody else, to tell another yid, or to tell a goy on Shabbos to do for me on Motzei Shabbos, rashoy ani lahach shecholav, I'm also allowed to stay there on Motzei Shabbos, to stay there rather until Motzei Shabbos in order to do it myself. So we'll see in the Gemara what Abba Shol is adding to what the Tanakhama says. There's also, I mean, is Abba Shol arguing with the Tanakhama, or is he just adding to it that you have the Meiri, for example, says he's just adding. Other Meforshim say he is actually arguing. So we'll see examples of this kind of thing, things where you're allowed to tell somebody else to do something for you. We'll have examples of those in the next Mishnah, Kuf Nun Aleph. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. When we say that you're not allowed to, hire workers, fine, we understand. But we're saying you're not allowed to tell somebody else to hire workers. Pshita, obviously. Maishnahu, maishnachabere. What's the difference? Whether you're doing it yourself or you're having your friend doing it, and yet he's another yid. He can't hire them on Shabbos either. So it would be lifneiver. So the Papa says, actually, you're right. The friend we're talking about right here means a goyisha friend. Okay, so then the question is, Maskev l'Ravashi Amir l'Nochri Shavuos. We know that it's a Shavuos. It's an Isur D'Rabbanon to tell a goy to do something for you on Shabbos that you yourself can't do. So in that case, still, what's the Chiddush? Now, one way of understanding the Gemara actually is that. So the usual way of understanding the Gemara is that the Gemara is in fact asking what's the Chiddush, and in fact, earlier in the Masechta, we had the concept of Amir L'Nochri, we had in the 16th Perek, when we talked about the dinim of a fire breaks out on Shabbos, we said that you're not allowed to tell a goy to put out the fire for you. So Tosfos over there explains that's what the Gemara is asking over here. We know already from there the concept of Amir L'Nochri, so what's the Chiddush over here? So most of the Meforshim understand it that way, but then the question becomes, so then there is a Chiddush. Over there, we're talking about doing an Isur D'Oraisa, putting out the fire. Here, we're talking about an Isur D'Rabbanan, hiring workers. So maybe Amir L'Nochri is in fact allowed for an Isur D'Rabbanan. So there are in fact some of the Rishonim, the Ran learns it that or Gemara that way, that the Gemara is actually asking, given that it's only an Isur D'Rabbanan, then maybe it should in fact be mutter to have the given that the actual hiring workers itself is only an Isur D'Rabbanan, maybe you should be able to tell a goy, which is also an Isur D'Rabbanan, maybe a D'Rabbanan on top of the D'Rabbanan is not an issue, Shavuos to Shavuos basically, and therefore it should be allowed. Most of the Meforshim though don't understand it that way, and they understand various reasons why in fact you would need both Mishnayos, but still the Gemara is asking over here, we already know it from that Mishnah. One of the Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out that over there we're talking about an Isur D'Oraisa. So we could argue that maybe to tell a goy to do an Isur D'Oraisa for you on Shabbos, like putting out a fire, would be also D'Oraisa, or at least Medivrei Kabbalah, from the words of the Pasuk over there in Yeshaya, Mimtzari Chefzecha V'Daber Daber. But then on the other hand, logically, telling them to do something D'Rabbanon should be also D'Rabbanon. So then the Gemara is asking that in that case, we understand that concept from there. Another point that Meforshim make is that over there also it's really only D'Rabbanon, because really, I mean, to put out a fire would be also D'Oraisa, only if you're doing it to make charcoal. That's the purpose they put out fires for in the Mishkan, whereas here you're not doing that. So whatever the case, so the Gemara is asking that, again, according to most of the Meforshim, the Gemara is asking that we know already that you're not allowed to tell a goy to do a malacha for you or to do any kind of Shabbos, any kind of activity that's also on Shabbos. You also to have a goy, to tell a goy to do it for you, even Motzei Shabbos. So in that case, then what's the Chiddush of the Mishnah? Tosfos points out maybe what it means is, why is the Gemara asking? What do you mean? It's pshita by Yisrael or by a goy? Maybe the case is you're telling him not hire workers for me today. Of course, you can't tell a fellow yid to hire workers for you today. He can't do it either. Maybe it means you're telling him hire workers for me tomorrow. The answer is Tosfos says because then there still wouldn't be that much of a chiddush in it, because actually we're going to learn later on in the Gemara that you're allowed to talk about your plans on Shabbos if there's some way to do it on Shabbos which is mutter, but if not. So over here, given that there's no way to hire workers on Shabbos in a way that's mutter, then obviously to say I'm going to hire workers would be usur, and therefore to say to somebody else I'm going to hire workers tomorrow would also be usur. So therefore there would still be no chiddush in it. Okay, So Ela Amar Rav Ashi, Afilu Tema Chaveri Yisrael. So Rav Ashi says, actually, you could even say, good morning, Oral, you could even say that we are talking about a Chaver Yisrael, and the Mishnah is telling us that you're not allowed to have him, you're not allowed to tell him to hire workers for you. So you're asking, what's the Chiddush? Of course, he's a fellow Yid, and he's not allowed to do it. The Chiddush is, HaKavash Malon, the Chiddush of that part of the Mishnah is not really the statement itself, that you're not allowed to tell him to hire workers, that's obvious. You're not allowed to tell him outright, hire workers for me. Aval, but the implication, the Mishnah wants to imply for us, what you are allowed to do, a person is allowed to say to somebody else, let's see if you're going to be able to stand with me this evening. Meaning, in other words, he's not outright telling him, now they both understand, why do you want me over this evening? Because I want to hire you for work. But he's not actually saying so in so many words. He's only thinking it, and as we're going to say in the Gemara soon, hear her is mutter on Shabbos. You're allowed to think business on Shabbos, even though it's better not to, but you are allowed to. You're just not allowed to speak business on Shabbos. So therefore, when he says, Hanira Shatamid Imila Erev, he's not actually speaking business, even though they both understand what the purpose is of him coming in the evening on Matzah Shabbos. Rashi himself and Tosfos in Avodah Zarah, it also has a little bit about the sugya, explains the words Hanira Shatamid Imila Erev a little different. It's in the form of a question. Does it look to you like you're going to be able to stand with me this evening? Either way, the point is that they're not outright saying, I want to hire you. Now, though, it does say in Shulchan Aruch, you're allowed to say a Loshen, as we're going to say in the Gemara, the Halacha is you're allowed to. You're not allowed to say a Loshen, though, for example, like, come to me this evening. That would be too much like actually planning to hire him after Shabbos. When you're saying an expression like this, does it look like you're going to be able to come to me this evening? Then that's that kind of thing is mutter. And therefore, umas nisin mani, Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha. So our Mishnah, therefore, goes like Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha. D'tanya, as we learn in a braisa, lo yoyma odom l'chaveira hanir shatamid imi l'erev. A braisa says, the chachamim say that a person is not allowed to say to another yid on Shabbos, let's see if you're going to be able to come over this evening, or does it look like you're going to be able to come over this evening? Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, oyma odom l'chaveira hanir shatamid imi l'erev. And Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha says, you are allowed to say that. So our Mishnah, when it says you're not allowed to tell another yid, hire workers for me, so in other words, the implication is why you're not allowed to tell him, because you're telling him outright to hire the worker. But if you're telling him, Anirish Tamid Imila Erev, then that would be Mutter, which is like Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha. And the Gemara says, Amar Rabba Bachana Amar Rabbi Yechana Alocha Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha. So the Alocha is like that, so you are allowed to say, Anirish Tamid Imila Erev. Tosfos gets into a long discussion over here, which we've had in other places before, about whether Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha is in fact the son of Rabbi Akiva or not. So one possibility is that Rabbi Akiva is called Kakerea Chazeh, and maybe Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha is his son. So Tosfos gets into a lot of discussion, pro and con, about that. First of all, is it respectful to Rabbi Akiva to call him Karcha in this context? Second of all, does it fit with Gemaras in other places where we see that Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha lived, where we see that Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha was very old by the time he met Rebbe? So Tosfos ends up saying that not. So Tosfos ends up saying, Rabbi Natam says that Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha is not the son of Rabbi Akiva. It's the son of somebody else, somebody else whose name was Karcha. I did see an explanation once that maybe it is in fact the son of Rabbi Akiva, but it's the son that Rabbi Akiva had before he ever started learning Torah. We know from Ovis Rav Nosson tells us that by the time that when he first went to Cheder to learn Torah, and he's learning with all the children, he went with his son. So he may have had it. So he apparently had a son by that point. He was already married before Rachel, and either his first wife died or he divorced her. He had a son with her. So that might be Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha over here. Because then, for one thing, then it's not so disrespectful that we're calling him Ben Karcha instead of Ben Rabbi Akiva. Because when at the time when he was born, his father was not yet the great Rabbi Akiva. He was Stam the shepherd Akiva. I've seen such an explanation. Somebody also once pointed out. Somebody once also asked. You have a Gemara. Actually, we're going to have it in a couple of blat. That seems to imply that Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha was very, very poor. So how does that fit with the fact we know Rabbi Akiva was very, very rich? So there's a few possibilities. One of them is, again, that story might have happened before Rabbi Akiva became rich. But other possibilities are Rabbi Akiva's wealth, Rabbi Akiva's money might have been confiscated by the Romans after they executed him. There's a lot of different possibilities. He came back before he became rich because Kabbalah Savor gave him half his money, and then the Gemara in Nedarim says five other ways that he became rich. Right, but it's a one possibility. If Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha is in fact Rabbi Akiva's son, okay, but eventually the Romans executed Rabbi Akiva, and they might have also confiscated all his wealth, and therefore Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha ended up poor. So we really don't know. Okay, anyway. No. Well, we do in the Machanayim books, but you know, everybody looks the same in those books, so you can't really tell. Okay. Yeah. All right. Onward. My time at Rabbi Shoben Korcha. Why indeed does Rabbi Shoben Korcha say you're allowed to say Hanirish Tamid Imila Erev? Isn't that talking business on Shabbos? The reason is the pasuk says you're not allowed to look after your needs. We say it in Shabbos morning Kiddush, or speak words implying Dibur Aser Hir Hur Mutter. You're not allowed to speak words of business on Shabbos. You're allowed to think about business. Now you're not supposed to. Better you shouldn't be thinking about your business on Shabbos either, but the Torah doesn't ask you for one thing because, listen, you know, it's hard for a person to control their thoughts. Yeah. I think the Gemara is going to take up that question now. So, yeah. Rami Leir of Achabar of Huna L'Rava. So now Rav Achabar of Huna points out a contradiction to Rava. Me, Amar of Yechen and Dibur Oser Hirhu Mutter. Is it in fact the case that how could we say that dibur is that dibur on Shabbos in business is osir, but thinking about his mutter? Alma hear her love could dibur dami. So you're saying, in other words, that thought is not the equivalent of speaking. So therefore, we can distinguish between them and say one is osir, one is mutter. The problem with that is that was a Rabbi Yechanan saying that, but va'amar Rabbi Babachana amar Rabbi Yechanan. But we also have Rabbi Babachana saying also in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, B'chol mokam mutter laharher, you're always allowed to think words of Torah, chutz mebe, even for example in a place where there's filth or whatever, chutz mebeis hamelchutz or beis hakiseh, except for a bathhouse or a bathroom. So we see another. Now, B'pashtus, why would you be also to think Divrei Torah? Because in those places, you're also to speak Divrei Torah. So we see that here, who is like Dibur, according to Rabbi Yochanan. So how are we saying over here that not? That's true. You're not allowed to think words of Torah in those places. So how does that fit? Right. Yeah. The answer is, actually, you have a Gemara in Zvachim where Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon teaches a certain thing in Torah while he was in the bathroom. And then the Gemara says, how is that allowed? It's basically because it was L'Onsa. He was so Torosu M'Nosa. He's the son of Rishon Bayechoy, after all, that he couldn't hold himself back even from speaking words of Torah in the bathroom. But yeah, for the rest of us who aren't on that level, that kind of thing is also. And yeah, to think words of Torah in the bathroom is also. There's plenty of other things. There's plenty of other things that you're allowed to. That there's plenty of other things you can think about in the bathroom. Yeah. No, you think? No, that's a different. That's a different Gemara. No. Okay. No, you're thinking of an Avodah Zarah. There's a story over there of a bathhouse that had a statue in it, and a goy asked Rabbi Gamliel how you're allowed to bathe in such a bathhouse. Yeah, and Rabbi Gamliel tells him, among other things, that we're not sure. You can see nobody's treating that idol with any kind of respect because they urinate in front of it and so forth. He gives him like three different answers, and the Gemara goes through those answers over there. All right. Anyway, returning to our Gemara over here. So the question is, if we're saying you're not allowed to think words of Torah in a bathroom or a bathhouse, so we see on the face of it that Hirur is Kedibur, so how is Rabbi Yechanan saying that Hirur is not Kedibur when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos? The answer is shiny hasam divin b'hoya machanecha kodesh v'leka. The difference is over there. It's not. It's taka doesn't have to do with speaking. The pasuk says your machane should be holy, your camp should be holy, and you don't have it over here. Meaning there, the Torah doesn't even use the word dover. So implying the place where you're camping out, the place where you're staying, has to be a place which is Kaddish. Now, why is that? Rashi says, because we're talking, the context of the Pasuk is telling us that when you're in an army camp, you have to go outside the camp in order to go to the bathroom. You're not allowed to do it in the camp. Why? Because of Ahayah Machanecha Kaddish. Rashi says, the point is, a Yid is always going to be thinking words of Torah. A Yid is Kaddish. A Yid is always going to be thinking words of Torah. And therefore, the Torah demands that his Machna should be Kaddish. But the point is, the Torah doesn't use the word Dover over there. So therefore, there's no reason to distinguish over there between thinking and speaking. Mashenkin over here, you have, the Torah says, the Pasuk says, V'daber Dover. So therefore, there's a reason to distinguish between thinking and speaking. The problem is Hachanami Ksiv Lo Yerah Becha Ervas Davar. The problem is that the pasuk in Parashas Kisetze, when it talks about this din of V'Hoyim Achanecha Kodesh, it says over there that there shouldn't be seen in you an Ervas Davar. So we see that it uses the word Davar. So therefore, it should be only also to speak words of Torah, not to think words of Torah. The answer is how we buy lechidur Rav Yehuda. That we need for a different din that Rav Yehuda teaches. The Amar Rav Yehuda, akum arum also likas kriyishma kenegdoi. You're not allowed to say kriyishma when there's a naked goy around. So that's ervas dover. You're not allowed to speak the words of kriyishma or any other words of Torah when there's erva around. So the Gemara says, my area akuma for Yisrael nami. Why are you mentioning a goy? Wouldn't the same din apply if there's a naked Jew around? Nah, the answer is no, it's not a difference of no bris or not. The answer is the Gemara says, loy me boya kamar. On the contrary, what Rabbi Yehuda is saying is needless to say. Loy me boya Yisrael, also needless to say if a yid is undressed over there, you're not allowed to say Krishma because his erva is really an erva. Aval akum, but when it comes to a goy, kivin dechtibbe asher b'sar chamorim b'sarim, by goyim it says an expression in a pasuk, their flesh is the flesh of donkeys. And actually, the Mephoshim on the Pasuk explained the word basar over there doesn't just mean the flesh of their skin of their bodies in general. Specifically, it refers to the erva. The Pasuk is criticizing the Jewish people over there, how they're going and always trying to ally themselves with this nation or that nation or whatever instead of trusting in Hashem. So the Pasuk always uses throughout, in many places in Tanakh, it uses a metaphor of a woman who is mezana to express this idea, like the Jewish people are married to Hashem, and instead they choose to go and be mezana with other idols and with other nations and whatnot. So the pasuk uses the expression that she had this desire from Mitzrayim, Hashem b'sar chamor and b'sarim. So the point is that the basar over there refers to their aver, that the like it's the aver of donkeys, like it, you know, because it's large, like, you know, therefore they have a taiva for it, kind of thing. But the point is that since the pasuk calls it Hashem b'sar chamor and b'sarim, a mashap dummy, so maybe it should be allowed. I mean, you're allowed to say Shema when there's an animal around, even though the animal's genitals are uncovered. Maybe the same din should apply to a goy. Therefore, Ema Shaper dummy, Kamash Malan, that is why Rabbi Yehuda needs to tell us specifically about the case of a goy. So yes, it would apply to a yid as well, but there you don't need Rabbi Yehuda to tell you that. It's fairly obvious. Gemara says, Ema Hochinami, maybe Takazoi, given that pasuk Hashem b'sar chamor and b'sarim, maybe in fact you are allowed to say Shema when there's a goy around who's undressed. Maybe taka, it's considered like an animal. So he has to, right, you definitely see this kedusha in the milah, sure, and that's why, like you're saying, like he had Eliezer take a shavua on it. Fine, of course, but nevertheless, the point is that still, when it's exposed, you can't be saying Krishma. But maybe taka, maybe when it comes to the erva of a goy, maybe you are allowed to say Krishma. The answer is no. Omakrov ervas aviyim loyrohu. No, because we find by Noach when he's lying over there undressed in his tent. The pasuk says about Shem and Yefes, they didn't see the nakedness of their father. So we see that Noach, who is not a yid, he's long before Matan Torah, and his erva is called an erva. So we see that even the erva of a goy is considered an erva in halacha. Well, whatever. The point is, he wasn't a yid. Well, that's fine, but nevertheless, I mean, he's still considered a ben Noach, right? I mean, the Sheva Mitzvah ben Noach were given to him, and halachically, he's not considered a Jew. I mean, especially there are Mephoshim who say that, okay, listen, I mean, he was a Navi and all that, but maybe now, after this time when he degraded himself, and by Yachol Noach Isha Adama, maybe now, like, he went down a level. Like, before that, he might have been considered a Yid, but now, after all that, you can't consider him a Yid anymore, and nevertheless, the Pasuk still calls his Erva an Erva. So we see, therefore, because he got drunk, and yeah, he disgraced himself, and yeah. So maybe therefore, like, he lost his status. Maybe he lost his status that he had before. Before he was a tzaddik, and now he's not so much of one. Now he's just Isha Adama. So the point is that yes, there are actually two different dinim over here. There's a din that you're not allowed to say Shema or any other dvarim shebekdusha when there's somebody around when there's erva around, and erva we learned in brachos as well includes also tefach beisha erva. So yeah, if there's a woman who's underdressed, then you're not allowed to say Krishma around. You have dinim involving that, but you're allowed to think words of Torah in that context. You're allowed to think words of Torah even if you yourself are undressed. You're still allowed to think words of Torah. Because there, it's only a matter of Erevas Dover. As opposed to, then you have V'hoya Machanecha Kodesh, that when there's Tzoya, or Meiraglayim around, or in a bathroom, or a bathhouse, or whatever, then you're not allowed to think words of Torah either. So that's the distinction. So yes, in general, Hirhur is not like Dibur. That's why as far as Shabbos, there's that distinction. When it comes to, when it comes to V'hoya Machanecha Kodesh, since the Pasuk itself does not use the word Dover over there, it uses the word Dover only in connection with Erva, then you do have a difference. Then you say that Dibur and Hirhur are the same thing, and you're not allowed to speak words of Torah in a bathroom, and you're not allowed to think words of Torah in a bathroom either. That's true. By Yid Machshav Ra Ein Hakadosh Baruch Hu Mitzarif for the Ma'aseh, Hashem doesn't combine his right. Actually, there is an exception to that. It says when a person thinks thoughts of Avodah Zarah, even a Yid, then it counts. Then it's considered like a Ma'aseh. But here we're talking about the other way. I mean, here we're talking about thinking of Dvarim Shebekdusha, and we're saying you're not allowed to do it in such places. Yeah. Okay. Fine. So the question is, v'dibru mi osir? Still, are you saying that speaking about business on Shabbos is osir? V'har Rav Chista v'Rav Hamnuna d'ami tevayu. We find that both Rav Chista and Rav Hamnuna say, cheshbonus shom mitzvah mutal l'chashvan b'Shabbos. You're allowed to make calculations for a mitzvah on Shabbos. For example, let's say to calculate how much you're going to need to spend to do a certain mitzvah. Or for example, calculating like how much you're going to give, how much you're going to give for a mishaberach or something. And the Amar Rabbah laws, a poskim tzedakah la'aniyim b'Shabbos, you're allowed to fix amounts for tzedakah for poor people on Shabbos, which includes, for example, when you say mishaberach and you say an amount that I'm going to give chai or whatever, that's included in poskim tzedakah la'aniyim b'Shabbos. It would also mean, for example, let's say, so the local gaboy tzedakah, fine, you have all the time. They make appeals on Shabbos for tzedakah. You have people will pledge certain amounts on Shabbos, things like that. So those kinds of things you're allowed to do on Shabbos, even though that involves business. Also, Rabbi Yaakov Ba'idi says in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, you're allowed to be mefachin pikuach nefesh and pikuach rabim b'Shabbos. Mefachin, Rashi uses a word over here, a French word over here, that means basically to extract. So it means like you're extracting a decision out of, you have a whole discussion what to do, and you extract, you come to a conclusion what you're going to do. So you're allowed to do that in connection with things of Pikuach Nefesh. And even Pikuach Nefesh, we don't mean where there's immediate Pikuach Nefesh, then there's no time for discussion. You got to go do it. We're talking about something that's that could lead to Pikuach Nefesh, like community affairs or whatever, where if a decision is not taken, what to do, then there's going to be danger danger. So you're allowed to do that. Also Pikuach Rabim, also decisions that affect the rabbim, same idea. You're allowed to do those on Shabbos. V'hochen lebotik nesias lefakeach al iskei rabbim b'Shabbos. You're allowed to go to the shuls to take decisions on iskei rabbim b'Shabbos, which includes, for example, let's say to make an asifa, to make a gathering in shul, let's say to discuss a certain point, what we're going to do as far as a certain situation that affects the rabbim. You're allowed to do that on Shabbos. V'amr of Shmuel ben Achmeni, Amr of Yechanan, or Rabbi Yonason, horchem the tartius of a kirkasais or the basilkois. You're allowed on Shabbos to go to the theaters or to the circuses or to the basilkois, which are palaces. Which all Rashi describes that all those places are various kinds of palaces where they gather, where the goyim gather together. Now the theaters and the circuses, you also have. They often gather there for entertainment. But the point is, they gather there. That's just at the place where many people gather, including you have the king or the emperor and the noblemen and whatever often gather in those places. And therefore, you're allowed to go to such places, lefakeach al iskei rabim b'Shabbos, in order to take care of community affairs on Shabbos. So, for example, let's say you go to the tautias or the kirkasos or whatever, and you find the king and his ministers and whatever over there to talk to them about iskei rabim b'Shabbos. Interesting thing, by the way, in the Rif, when the Rif brings this halacha, and then there's a note in parenthesis there in the text of the Rif from somebody named Reb Shmuel, who says that maybe in our Gemara, maybe we shouldn't be goris the word b'Shabbos, because forget about Shabbos, you need a heter to go to such places on weekdays as well. There's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah that tells us your yid has no business going to the goyish theaters and circuses, so therefore maybe we need a heter over here just to do it on weekdays. On the other hand, the Shulta Agiborim there says, no, because that's why Rashi makes a point of mentioning over here that we're talking about these are various kinds of palaces where the goyim gather. You're not going over there in order to watch the plays or the shows or the games or whatever that they have over there. You're going there for iske rabim. So therefore, there's no chiddush that you're allowed to go there on weekdays. The chiddush is you're allowed to go there on Shabbos, even though it's talking business because it's tzorchei rabim. That's possible also. Then there may be, that's possible. That might be one explanation of when we're saying over here, going to the Kirkasos, might be. I may have mentioned it once, I don't remember. But yeah, it could very well be that that's included in the Tzorchei Rabim, that you have Jews, who've been condemned to be killed in the arena or whatever, and you go there in order to plead for their lives, or in order to vote, in order to give the thumbs up, or whatever the signal was that he should be spared. Yeah, could be. Anyway, so you're allowed to do such things on Shabbos. The Tana Dvei Menashe, and a braisa from the yeshiva of Menashe taught, Meshadchin al Tanoikos la'oras b'Shabbos, you're allowed on Shabbos to make shidduchim for children, to arrange shidduchim on Shabbos, you're allowed to do that. V'alatinik l'lamde sefer l'lamde umnus, you're allowed to also arrange a shidduch with a teacher that you're going to have, that the teacher is going to teach your child Torah, or teach him a trade, because all those things are things that a father is responsible to make sure that are done for his son. So all those are examples of cheshvonos Shal mitzvah, and yeah, we mentioned this. Yeah, we mentioned this a couple of months ago. Yeah, so we see that all these kinds of talk are allowed, even though they're business related. Now, it's true when it comes to the teacher, you're not allowed to fix an actual price with the teacher. You're not allowed to tell him, let's say, you know, I'll pay you X amount of dollars per hour for you to teach my son, but you're. No, what do you mean? First of all, we're talking about over here also the lamde umdus, to teach him a trade. That for sure you're allowed to pay him. But even on weekdays, no, you're allowed to. No, you're on weekdays, no, because you don't pay him. Technically, you're paying him for schar batola. You're paying him for the fact that during that time, he could have been doing some other work and earning money that way. But anyway, the point is that, so you're not allowed to make up with the teacher, let's say, that, you know, you come teach my son and I'll pay you X dollars per hour. But you're allowed to make the general thing that you're going to come teach my son, let's say, you know, three times a week or whatever, and after Shabbos, you'll figure out the money. So anyway, the point is, we see from all of that you are allowed to talk business on Shabbos. The answer is, the answer is, the Pasuk says that you're not allowed to look after your affairs and speak words, implying only your chafatzim, only your needs are also chefze shemayim mutarim, but chefze shemayim, which all these things are chefze shemayim, because all of them are for the purpose of some mitzvah or other, so such things you're allowed to talk about on Shabbos. And that's how I was mentioning, yeah, you're right, so we talked about this earlier, we talked about in the 15th perek of our Masechta, we talked about of this Masechta, we talked about these dinim, we talked briefly about the concept of Mimtzai Cheftzach HaVadaber Dover over there. We didn't get into the details. The details are over here. But yeah, that's, you have a popular Zemmer from one of those Midos on Shabbos that lists a bunch of these things. Chafatzach HaAsurim HaGam Lachav Cheshbonus, Hurim Mutarim, as we're saying in the Gemara over here, Hurim Mutar, or the Shadi Chabonus, you're allowed to make Shidduchim, Betinik Lalamde Sefer, yeah. So the Python over there, the who composed the song, took our Gemara and put it into song form, yeah. Okay. Okay. So that's the deal then. So you're not allowed to speak business on Shabbos, but you are allowed if it's Cheftze Shemayim. So therefore, all these examples that we just brought involving Pikuach Nefesh or Pikuach Rabim or Cheshbonus of Tzedakah or whatever, you're allowed to do such things on Shabbos. Yeah. Okay. Amr of Yehuda Amr Shmuel. Cheshbonus shel malach v'shel mabakach mutar l'chashven b'Shabbos. You are allowed on Shabbos to calculate cheshbonus of malach, melach, and of mabakach. So what is malach? Rashi explains two explanations. Malach can be meloshen, the Aramaic word for advice is malach, or malka, or milka, or whatever. So therefore it can mean things where there's just advice that is not relevant to you. For example, let's say you're talking about on Shabbos, if I wanted to build a house, that looks like such and such, how much would it cost? So it's just like a hypothetical thing. You're not talking about, I'm actually planning to build such a house and therefore I need to raise X amount of money. You're talking about like, if I wanted to build such a house, how much would it cost? So you're allowed to do such a thing on Shabbos because it's an Eitzah she'ena shaloi, Rashi says. It's like advice that's not relevant to you. The second explanation, Rashi says, is malach is like the word maloch. What is it to you? Like it's something that's completely irrelevant to you. So an example would be the same kind of thing. If you look at somebody's mansion, for example, and you say, I wonder how much money it costs to build such a mansion, it's maloch. What's it to you? You're not going to have that kind of money ever. You're not going to be building that kind of mansion. So therefore, it's not anything that's relevant to you at all. So you're allowed to speak about it on Shabbos. You would be allowed to, for example, you pass by, you pass by somebody's mansion on Shabbos, and you talk with your friend, and you say, I wonder how much money it costs to build that mansion. It must have cost, X amount for this and X amount for that. You're allowed to talk such talk on Shabbos because it's not really relevant to you. It's tam devorim b'talim. It's Lala World, yeah. So now, it is true you're not supposed to be speaking too much Dvorim B'Talim on Shabbos either. In fact, the Tosfos earlier, when we talked about Cheftza Chafatzecha Asurim, but Cheftza Shemayim Mutarim, Tosfos brought over there from a Yerushalmi that says the Chachamim had a hard time even being matur that you should be able to greet another Yid on Shabbos. B'koshi Yitidu She'elas Shalom B'Shabbos. So you're still not supposed to be speaking Dvorim B'Talim on Shabbos, but you're allowed to. There's a difference between what you're allowed to versus what you should do. Okay. Then there's a third explanation on the side, brings from the Aruch that the word is supposed to be milach, which is meloshin, a guest, vayava helach. So therefore it means you're allowed to calculate how many guests you're going to have at your table. Now, we learned in the previous Mishnah, you're not allowed to read them off a list, but you're allowed to calculate in your head how many guests you're planning to invite. So you're allowed to do that. And then b'shal ma'abakach and ones that are irrelevant, that's what we're saying. We're saying that you're allowed to think. Yeah. Tanya Nami Hoche, we learn, right. Okay. So the Tanya Nami Hoche, Cheshbonis, Sh'ovru V'sha, Sidin Lius, also L'chashvan, we learn similarly in a Braisa. Calculations of things that were in the past or things that are going to be, you're not allowed to calculate them on Shabbos, meaning, in other words, where they have some kind of relevance, as we're going to see in the Gemara soon. Shamalach, but these cheshbonos shamalach, these irrelevant cheshbonos that we're saying, v'shamabakach, or mabakach, Rashi says, for example, let's say, now mabakach, Rashi also includes where it was something relevant at one time, but now it isn't anymore. For example, let's say a person talks about, I spent X amount of money on this building. So now at this point, it's not a relevant thing anymore because it's already a done deal. So such things, mutar l'choshvan, you're allowed to calculate such things on Shabbos. So we see, like Shmuel is saying, that you're allowed to do cheshbonos shamalach. But the Gemara says, Raminu, I have a contradiction. Another Braisa says, Choshen cheshbonos she'enen tzrichin, you're allowed on Shabbos to calculate unnecessary cheshbonos, ve'ein mechashben cheshbonos she'tzrichin, but you're not allowed on Shabbos to calculate calculations that you do actually need, b'Shabbos. So on Shabbos, you're not allowed to calculate calculations that are still going to be needed. Ketzad, so what does this mean? A person can say to somebody else, I hired X number of workers for this field, because it's something in the past, and it's not relevant anymore. Or kach v'kach dinarim hotzesi al dirazu, or I spent X number of dinarim on this house. But he can't say, I already spent X amount and I'm going to still spend X amount. So the question is, in other words, that so we see that you, so what are you telling me that you we're saying that you're allowed to calculate ones, you're allowed to calculate ones that were in the past. I spent X amount on this field, but you're not allowed to calculate ones that are going to be relevant for the future. So then what do we mean over here? We said that Shasit, the first Braisa said Cheshbonos She'avru is also to calculate them on Shabbos. So what's going on over here? Are you allowed to calculate such things? Are you allowed to say I spent X amount on renovating my house, or are you not? So the Gemara says, "Vli taimeich nu," and according to your own svara that you're even asking the question, "Kashalach hi gufa." Don't you have a contradiction in the first braisa itself? First, you're saying that cheshbonos for the past are also, and then you're saying cheshbonos of malach are allowed. Cheshbonos of the past are malach because they're not relevant anymore. So what is it? Are you allowed to calculate such things or not? So malach means, if there's a few different possibilities, we said, but one of them is that it's things that are not relevant anymore. The answer is Ela Hod Ikra Agra Dagira Gabe Hod Lekra Agra Dagira Gabe. It depends. Do you still have by you the money that still needs to be paid to the workers? So you can have the job's already been finished, but you haven't paid the workers yet. So then in that case, even though the job is already done, it's still a calculation, which is relevant because you still need to know how much you need to pay your workers. Therefore, it's also to make such calculations on Shabbos. On the other hand, once all the bills have been paid off and everything, then now it's something in the past. Now you can talk about it on Shabbos, and now you can calculate the amounts you spent because now it's not relevant. Now it's a cheshbon of malach. Agira means the pay. Agira means the hired worker. Agra means the payment. Agira means the hired worker. So you hired the people, but you didn't pay them yet. So even though the job, and you still have that money by you because you haven't paid them yet, that cheshbon therefore is still relevant. It's still something that had. It's still something where it's still an open thing. Therefore, you're not allowed to calculate it on Shabbos because that would be talking about business on Shabbos. But once it's already done and all the workers have been paid, then not. Well, we have Malchius but I'm not sure. Okay, I don't know if I can think about it. For the story of the slap, okay. So now, one thing would be, for example, if you're going to have, for example, that you're going to be talking about with somebody else, I spent X amount on renovating my kitchen, let's say, and then the other person is going to be able to use that as a guide for himself to be able to do the same thing, that would be a problem, because then you're doing it for the purpose of talking business. But Stam, we're talking Stam, you're talking Dvarim Batalim, that would be allowed. Okay. The Mishnah had said, Ein Machshichin. The Mishnah had said you're not allowed to go to the edge of the Tchum and wait there until Shabbos is over in order to do things that are also on Shabbos, like to go hire workers or to go gather and bring in payers. It happened once with a certain chassid that there was a breach, there was a hole in the wall around his field. The nimla chaleh legoidra, so he thought about it on Shabbos that he was going to fix it. The niska shabbos uvenimna oisa chassid legoidra. He remembered that it was Shabbos, and so he held back and did not fence it in. Now, if it's that he didn't fence it in on Shabbos, there's not much of a chiddush in that. Of course, he's a chassid; he's not going to break Shabbos. The Yerushalmi actually tells the story a little bit differently, that he thought on Shabbos that he's going to fix it after Shabbos. And then he caught himself and he realized, wait a second, I had a machshava on Shabbos to do a malacha after Shabbos, which I'm, now we said hiru mutter, but he being a chosid, he wanted to be machma on himself. So when we say v'nimna oisa chosid v'legodra, we don't mean that he held back from doing it on Shabbos. There's no chiddush in that. He held back from doing it even after Shabbos because he didn't want, heyos, that he had thought about it on Shabbos. He didn't want to do it after Shabbos. The nasaloi nes, so a nes happened, but also by tzlaf, a tzlaf bush grew in that breach, in that hole in the wall. So first of all, it closed up the hole. So this way, no wild animals or robbers or whatever can get in and steal the stuff from his field. And second of all, from then on, he was able to have parnosa from this tzlaf because, as we learned in Brachos, as you mentioned, Aaron, a tzlaf bush grows three different kinds of edible things. You have the fruits themselves, you have the shells that grow around the fruit, which are edible separately, and you have these little berry-like things that grow on the leaves. So each of those are edible separately. And therefore, so he and his family were now able to have a nice, comfortable parnosa from selling the produce of the tzlaf plant. In English, it's called caperberry. So you can find actually sometimes in the store, you can find sometimes in the same section as the pickles and whatnot, you'll find a jar of little tiny fruits that are called caperberries. Those are actually the tmoros. Those are not the actual fruit themselves. Those are the tmoros. Those are those little bumps that you find on the yeah. Okay. So the real thing of it is there's a type of berry. But that you don't usually find in the stores, although occasionally you could. Whatever the case, the point is that slaf bush, it's in English, it's called a caperberry, so it produces three different kinds of things that you can eat, and therefore this chassid was able to benefit. Yeah. So Rashi mentions the lovim, which is the new growth No, what we're eating is the tomatoes. What we're eating when we eat capers, when you buy jarred capers, the tomatoes are those things, those little triangular shaped things that you find that are jarred over there in vinegar or whatever. Yeah. Okay, you know what? The law of them would be something else. That would be the little growths at the end of the branches. All right. Anyway, let's go on. The berries are something different. Yeah. Anyway, whatever. The point is, Yeah, I think so. Yeah, we learned about in Brachos the berries themselves are eights, and the rest would be hadama. Yeah. There is something that's brought the Ramami Fano brings it. It's brought by a number of other achronim as well. That this chosid was a gilgul of tzlofchad. So tzlofchad, the famous mekoshish eitzim, which we learned earlier in the Masechta, that we had an opinion of Rabbi Akiva that it was tzlofchad. So he was Mechal Shabbos. Now we said maybe he was Mechal for a valid reason because he had in mind, he wanted to show the Jewish people how serious breaking Shabbos is even after the Chet HaMenaglim. Nevertheless, though, he still needed a tikkun. So his tikkun was, he came back as a Chassid Echad who didn't even though he only thought about it on Shabbos, he never ended up doing the Malacha. And therefore, so what was his reward? He got a Tzlaf, Tzlaf Chad, one Tzlaf, like the name Tzlafchad. We didn't have this before. I did mention this briefly when we talked about the Mekoshesh Eitzim back on Daf Tzadik Vav, Tzadik Zayin. I mentioned this point, but this story is only over here in the Gemara. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Let's go on. Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel. A person is allowed on Shabbos to tell his fellow Yid, I plan to go to a certain city tomorrow. Meaning another way, and it's not, now even though we said you're not allowed to talk business on Shabbos, but he's allowed to talk that he plans to go to a certain city tomorrow because there is a way that it would be mutter to do that on Shabbos. The activity in and of itself is not also on Shabbos. She'im yesh brugonin hoylich. If there were to be brugonin on the way, then you would be allowed to walk. We know you're not allowed to walk outside the tchum Shabbos. So okay, if you put down an eight of tchumin, then you can go up to an extra 2,000 amos. But you also have, if there are brugonin in the middle, which are little huts where, for example, people, shepherds stay there, people who watch the fields to make sure nobody steals the produce stay there, those kinds of things. So if you have Burgonin within 70 and two-thirds amos of the city, then it's considered an extension of the city, and then the tchum begins from there. And if you have another one within 70 and two-thirds amos of that, then the same thing, and you can keep on going like that. You have. I once saw somebody say that maybe you could have, you know, nowadays in the United States, you have like pretty much the whole area from Boston to Washington is like that. You can hardly go, you know, 70 and two-thirds amos is about 100 feet. There's hardly any place that you can go where you're not going to have a house within 100 feet of the previous house. And therefore, the whole thing might be considered all within one Tchum Shabbos. I don't know if the halacha is like that, but it's an interesting possibility. But yeah, definitely, for example, I mean, you can walk in the whole New York City, for example, and even you can walk through half of Long Island before you reach a point where you're gonna have houses that far apart. So yeah. Anyway, so the point is, so in and of itself, walking to another city is not necessarily Chilul Shabbos, because if there are Burgonin, then you're actually allowed to. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is saying, therefore Shmuel is saying, that you are allowed to talk about on Shabbos about your plans to go to that city after Shabbos. Okay. Well, maybe. So yeah. So the Gemara says Tanan, let's look at our Mishnah and see if that works. The Mishnah had said, "Ein machshichin al tchum lisko poilim alahavi peiros." We said you're not allowed to stay by the edge of the tchum where you're planning to go after Shabbos to hire workers or to bring peiros. So now why? B'shleim lisko poilim. Now I can understand why you wouldn't be allowed to do that, to hire workers. D'b'Shabbos le'motzi agar, because after all, on Shabbos there's no way to hire them in a way that's mutter. Ela lahavi peiros. Why would we say he can't bring peiros? Based on what Shmuel is saying, that if the activity itself is mutter on Shabbos, then you're allowed to plan for it on Shabbos. So then, lema sheim yesh shom mechitzis, maybe. After all, there would be a way, if there were mechitzis continuously from where the peiros are until the city, then it would all be considered like as if it was within Dalet Amos. The tchum wouldn't begin yet until outside those mechitzis, and you'd be allowed to carry the peiros. There wouldn't be a problem of tchumin. There wouldn't be a problem of carrying from reshus to reshus. So it would be allowed. So by that logic, the same way as we're saying, if there were burgenin, even though right now there aren't actually, you are allowed to plan about going to that city on Shabbos. The same way you should be allowed to plan on Shabbos to go bring your peiros, because if there were mechitzes, you would have been allowed to carry them. Again, carrying the peiros themselves is not intrinsically an isser. So that doesn't fit with what Shmuel is saying. The answer is mashgachas lava peiros hamchoborim. The answer is it could very well be talking about fruit that's still attached to the ground. So then you have no way to pick it on Shabbos. It's one thing if it was detached fruit. Yeah, maybe you would be allowed to be machshech al tchum because carrying the fruit itself is not in and of itself an issur Shabbos. But to pick fruit on Shabbos is. So therefore, so that would be the case that we're saying you're not allowed to. Machshech means we're saying you're staying by the edge of the tchum until it gets choshech, until it gets dark on Matzah Shabbos, and then you're going to go and then you're going to go and do whatever it is you wanted to do. So it can still fit with what Shmuel is saying, because Shmuel is talking about when it's an activity that there is a way to do on Shabbos, which is mutter, whereas the Mishnah, when it's talking about Lahavi Peris, is talking about not just carrying the fruit, which might be mutter on Shabbos, but picking it, which would be aser. Okay. What about V'hatani Rab Oshia Ein Machshichin Al Atchum Lahavi Tevin Bakash? What about, we have Rab Oshia says in a braisa, so you're not allowed to stay until it gets dark by the edge of the tchum where you're planning to bring back Tevin or Kash. Tevin and Kash are both straw, but the difference is that Kash is primarily the part of the straw which is still attached to the ground. Meaning, when you harvest the grains, you cut off the stalk of grain, and you have some of the stalk comes along with the grain, and then later on you go and thresh it, and you separate out the seed, the kernels from the straw and from the shells and whatever, and then you have what still stays attached to the ground. In English, it's called stubble. Like you have the same word when a person shaves, for example, and you have the hair that's left over is also called stubble. So that is called tevin. That is called kash. That is called kash. And you have, for example, in Parshas Shmos, when it describes over there how Pare announces, I'm not going to be giving you Tevin anymore. You go and find Tevin from wherever you can. So Tevin is what's already detached from the ground. Kash is what's still attached. So the Pasuk says they all fanned out all over Mitzrayim, lekoshish kash l'tevin, because they couldn't find enough tevin. They couldn't find enough stuff that was detached because the Mitzrayim wouldn't let them take it. They had to go to try and find the kash, the stuff that's still attached to the ground, to be able to pick it and use it for tevin. They prevented them from taking, and therefore they had to go and gather kash that was still attached to the ground to be able to use for tevin. So the point is that, so we're saying over here, Rav Oshia is saying you can't bring Tevin or Kash. So B'shlema Kash Mashkachas L'Mechover, Kash can very well still be attached. Because again, now Kash can also sometimes mean where it's detached. Because we had, for example, earlier, we had a Mishnah a while back that mentioned, for example, about when there's Kash on a bed, you're not allowed to move it by hand, but you're allowed to move it with your shoulder. So Kash can be detached, but it can also still be what's attached to the ground as the stubble. So then you can say, in other words, Rav Oshia is saying the same thing, because it's attached to the ground and there's no way to pick it, which would not be an Issur Shabbos, therefore you're not allowed to be machshich for it, you're not allowed to go to the edge of the tchum in order to be able to go and pick it after Shabbos. So we said, because usually, if it's used for Michael Behema, then fine, but otherwise we said it's not usually something that has a use on Shabbos, usually you just use it for firewood and therefore it would be mutter. So if there was a pillow or a cushion on it showing that you mean for sleeping, then you're allowed to. But yeah. Anyway, Ela Tevin Hechi Mashkachasla. But Tevin, by definition, is detached from the ground. And in fact, in other places, Rashi explains that it's not just that Tevin is detached from the ground. In other places, Rashi explains that Tevin is actually where it's chopped up already. Where Tevin, in other words, after the threshing process, you've already threshed the grain in order to get the kernels out of the straw, and in the course of that, the straw itself ends up getting chopped up into little pieces. That's Tevin, Rashi defines in other places. So Tevin, by definition, is detached from the ground. So then, according to Shmuel's rule, why would you not allow to be machshich in order to get it? It's doch detached from the ground. And theoretically, if there were walls on the way, if there were mechitzas on the way, you would be able to bring it. The answer is betivna sarya. The answer is you could be talking about where it's spoiled straw. It's rotten. You can't use it for Michael Behema even. So therefore it's mukta. So in other words, yes, if it was fresh tevin, then you would be allowed to, but now that it's spoiled and even animals won't eat it, then therefore there's what would you be bringing it for is only for firewood, so therefore it's mukta on Shabbos. Okay. So that braisa of Rav Oshia is no proof against Shmuel because the kash is attached to the ground and the tevin is muktzah because it's spoiled. So therefore, you're not allowed to be machshich in order to bring them. But if it was tevin that was detached and that was still fresh and that was edible by animals, then maybe you would be allowed to be machshich. You can't bring it on Shabbos itself because l'maisa there are no mechitzis. But since if there were mechitzis, you would have been allowed to, then you would be allowed, according to Shmuel's rule, to be machshich for it. It means to be ready to be able to wait by the edge of the tchum to be ready to do it. Right. Okay. Toshma. Let's prove. The next Mishnah says, "Machshichin al tchum lefakeach al iske kala v'al iske ames." The next Mishnah says, "You are allowed to wait by the tchum until Shabbos is over in order to take care of matters involving a kala or matters involving a mess." Implying al iske kala or mess ein al iske achaloi. So only when it's for a kala or for a mess, then it's allowed because again it's cheftze shemaim, like we said before, it's for the purpose of a mitzvah for achnosas kala or halvoyas a mess, as the case may be. But implying that if it was for another purpose, even though it's the same kind of activity, it would be also because not for a dvar mitzvah. So what kind of activity are we talking about? Now, what case would you have where you're allowed to do something for a kala, but you're not allowed to do the same thing for somebody else? Would be, for example, going and cutting, would be to go and cut hadassim. They used to make a chuppah out of hadassim for a kala. So we're saying that if you were cutting hadassim for some other purpose, you're not allowed to go be machshich for that purpose, since the cutting itself is an activity which is also on Shabbos, but you're allowed to when you're going to cut them for kala, because then it's for a dvar mitzvah. So you're not going to do the actual cutting on Shabbos, but you're allowed to be machshich where you're that way, you're closer to the destination where you're going to be able to cut them. Ela mess my new, but what would it be for a mess? Lachora it would be lahavi le or lahavi le tachrichin. Lachora it would be to bring over an oren and tachrichin for a mess. So in that case, for katani mess a naval achilai. So the implication is you're only allowed to because you're doing it for the sake of a mess. Then you're allowed to, because again, it's for a dvar mitzvah, implying, but if it was to bring something for somebody else, then it would be also. Now, according to Shmuel's rule, why not? According to Shmuel's rule, carrying is something which is intrinsically an activity, which is mutter on Shabbos. It's only also over here because of tchumin or because there's no mechitzis. But if there were mechitzis, it would have been allowed to. So by Shmuel's rule, it should be allowed to go there even for a different purpose where you're just going to carry something. Why is the Mishnah saying it's only mutter where you're going to bring something for a mess? And the answer is, mes nami mashkachas lola migza le glima. The answer is, even for a mess, you can have a case where you need to cut for him tachrichin. Let's say you have a large piece of cloth, which is too large, you need to cut a piece of it to get it to his size for tachrichin. On the side of it, he brings for an aruch, from the aruch, another explanation that it means to sew tachrichin. Whatever it is, cutting or sewing, there's things that are completely also on Shabbos. So that could be what the Mishnah means. So again, you'd be allowed to be machshich where you're going to be going to sew or to cut tachrichim for the mess because it's for a dvar mitzvah. So therefore, you're allowed to go to and stay there by the edge of the tchum until Shabbos is over and then get ready to do that. But if it was bringing some, if it was just bringing an order and tachrichim, you wouldn't even need the heter because it's for a mess. It would be mutter b'chlal based on Shmuel's rule. Because Shmuel's rule is whenever it's something that could have been mutter on Shabbos, for example, because there are mechitzes or because there are burgenin or whatever, then you're allowed to be machshich for it on Shabbos. Right? Yeah. So because when it's for dvar mitzvah, yeah. Okay. By the way, Tosfos points out they used to have hadassim for a mess as well. However, the Mishnah does mention over there orim tachrichim. The next Mishnah explicitly says orim tachrichim. So therefore, we have to assume that that's what it's talking about. Okay. We said in the Mishnah avo machshichin, we said you are allowed to stay by the edge of the tchum where your plan is to watch your peiros, because again, watching peiros is something you're allowed to do on Shabbos. And then after Shabbos, you can be bringing peiros home once you're there already. So the question is, what do you mean you're allowed to stay there in order to do that? But what do you mean you're allowed to bring back the food? But afa gavdalei avdil. What does that mean? How you're allowed to bring back the food before making avdala? Va'amar Rabbi Elazar ben Antigna.
It's not covered.
Tomorrow
is on the floor.
Okay. So the Afa Gavdalei Avdil, are you telling me that even if he didn't make Abdullah, he's allowed to bring fruit back home? You're not allowed to do Malacha before Abdullah. A person is not allowed to do his activities before he does Abdullah.
So the end, v'chitema de avdol b'tefila. So you're going to say the answer is he said avdola in davening. He said atachon antanu. No good. V'omer of Yehuda Amar Shmuel hamavdol b'tefila tzarich shi'avdol alakos. You still, even if he said atachon antanu, you still have a mitzvah to make avdola alakos. We talked about in brachas. We had a sugi over there explaining that for the original takana was just to make in davening, but then later on they became richer, so then they said you should make alakos. Then they became poor. Then the yidden became poorer again, and then they said you should say in tefillah and alakos. V'chitema d'avdol alakos. So you're going to say, okay, maybe you're talking about that he did make Abdullah on a cup of wine. What do you mean? Kos basodamik? What do you mean? He's out there in the field. He's by the edge of the tchum. There's no cup of wine over there. How is he making Abdullah? He walked on Shabbos, right? So how is the scenario that he should be able to do Abdullah? The answer is Tirgum or Rav Nosson Ba'ami Kamei Rava Ben Agitis Shanu. The answer is Rav Nosson Ba'ami explained in front of Rava. We can be talking about during the wine pressing season. So therefore, you have all the vats are full of wine. So yeah, you are able to then take. You have there's kalem around. There's wine in the vat. So therefore, you're able to take a cup of it and make Bo Priya Goffin and make Avdala on it. On the other hand, Amalei Rav Abba Rav Ashi. Rav Abba says to Rav Ashi, you don't really need that. Because in the West, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, we would say and then we would do our needs, then we would do our malachas on Matzah Shabbos. So in other words, if you don't actually have to make, you do eventually have to make Havdalah ala kos, but to do malacha, you are allowed to just when you said at the chanantadu and you say Baruch HaMavdu. And Rav Ashi says similarly, Ki Havena Be Rav Kahana, when we were Tamidim in the yeshiva of Rav Kahana, have Omer HaMavdim and Kodesh L'chol, we would say HaMavdim and Kodesh L'chol, Omasal Tin and Silti, and then we would start chopping wood. Now, what you actually have, there's actually a little bit of discussion about this among the poskim. First of all, when we say Baruch HaMavdim and Kodesh L'chol, does it mean you have to say it with Shemu Malchus? Or not. The Rif actually says, and I think the Rosh also says, that you have to say Baruch Atah Hashem HaMavdim Ben Kodesh L'chol. However, the halacha is not like that. We know. We always just say Baruch HaMavdim Ben Kodesh L'chol without Shem HaMalchus. Second of all, there's also the question, so if you didn't say Atah Chanantanu and you didn't say Baruch HaMavdil, are you allowed to do any malacha at all, or is it maybe you're allowed to do like easy malachas, like for example, lighting a candle or something, but not more involved malachas, like let's say sewing or doing other such things like that. So you have a machlokas poskim about that. And actually you have the Reb Velvel Brisker talks about, there's a whole lumnus on the Rambam, that why is it that you're not allowed to do malacha before Havdalah? Rashi over here says the reason is because you need a heker, the lavas is a melech, to escort the king, to escort the Shabbos queen by saying Baruch HaMavdil, whereas the Rambam says because you have a mitzvah of doing Havdalah, and you're not allowed to do malacha before you do the mitzvah. So the Son of Velvel talks about that there's a little bit of lomdos, that therefore that might be a difference, for example. So are you allowed to do an easy malacha? According to Rashi, maybe, because it's such an easy, simple malacha, you can't really say that you need a heker for that. Whereas according to the Rambam, maybe not even that, because after all, you can't do any kind of malacha before you do Havdalah. So you also have there could be a nafkamina whether you're allowed to eat before Havdalah. The actual halacha, as we know it, is it's enough to say Atachan Antanu or Baruch HaMavdil in order to be able to do malacha. And by the way, so if you don't say Atachan Antanu in davening, or women who don't say Atachan Antanu have to say Baruch HaMavdil in order to be able to do any kind of malacha, because the accepted halacha is even an easy malacha, you're not allowed to. But as far as eating, we need on top of that, you need to actually make Havdalah before you're allowed to eat. So even if you said Atachan Antanu and you said Baruch HaMavdil, you still can't eat yet. You still have to actually make Havdalah ala kos, which is the takana of the Chachamim. But to do malacha, you'd be allowed to. The actual halacha is you're allowed to do malacha after one or the other of them. So either you say Atachan Antanu in davening, or you say Baruch HaMavdil, and then you're allowed to do malacha. So that would be the case over here. So why is this guy allowed? So we don't need now that it's talking about during the wine pressing season, even if it's during the rest of the year. He davens Ma'ariv over there out in the field. He says Baruch HaMavdil. And now he's allowed to bring home his fruit. Okay.